Hello, everybody. Happy Thanksgiving to you. And today is a special Thanksgiving episode of Real Music. And on today's show, I've got the talented guitarist and vocalist. He's in a band called Monkey Beat. He's a guitarist for George Thorogood and the Destroyers. And he's got a new album out called Texas Scratch with some talented guitarists in their own right. Buddy Whittington and Vince Converse, very talented guitar players, and a great album. I checked it out, and you need to check it out too. Very enjoyable to listen to. Some cool tunes. It will make you smile, especially if you love blues and a lot of cool guitar licks. But here we go. Here he is. Here's Jim Suler.
Now tell me about this new album now. Now, am I reading right? It took 14 years to be really, I mean, I'm thinking 14 years is a long time. You know, a lot of things happen between when it's recorded and now. So why 14 years and why did you decide, hey, we got to release this thing now?
Well, it wasn't my decision. This group was sort of put together by some folks. A guy in New York sort of orchestrated that. And we did it on their dime. And I think whoever had the money, I think after the record was completed, something fell through and it just languished in limbo for all this time. And it was really, I had no control over it. It wasn't anybody in the groups. It was out of our hands.
Yeah.
So once these guys got all that sorted out, we finally got the album together.
Awesome.
Yeah. Because everybody asked me that. I don't really have an answer other than I don't know.
But all you know is here it is. But
right.
Right. At least it's out. At least, some things are worth the wait, right? Wouldn't you say that this is worth the wait? Tell me about the guys you recorded with and how y'all got together for this.
Well, I knew both these guys already. And as I said, this was sort of orchestrated by a guy in New York named Arnie Goodman. And so we all convened in New Jersey because that's where Texas guitar players go to make an album.
Okay. Makes sense, I guess.
Right. That's where they wanted to do everything. So off we went. And, we all came in with our own material and we basically learned everything in the studio and recorded it. We did it, that was the pre-production, was doing it all there. So, but I had known Vince from the early 90s, when he was from Houston and I used to go down there and play Southeast Texas a lot. I'm from Dallas. And so I knew Vince from that era. And of course, Buddy Whittington's from Fort Worth, which is 35 miles away from me. I live in Dallas, as I said. So yeah, I mean, our paths had crossed, but that's how this effort came. This collaborative effort came together.
That's awesome. And I'm sure you've been, from Dallas and the blues and all that, you've been around a lot of blues artists over the years. And I know you've had some influences, and I'm guessing the guy behind you there. Tell me, how did you, now you grew up what, in the 60s, 70s?
I was born in December 1960, so I kind of came of age in the late 60s. I mean, I was a very precocious kid. I mean, I had Beatles albums when I was 6 years old. I was very tuned. I was just, that kind of kid. I read the newspaper and watched the TV news and listened to the radio, in addition to the usual Popeye and Three Stooges stuff.
Sure.
So I was kind of hip to that at an early age. But I didn't realize, there's a great blues tradition in Texas, and there were so many great guitar players in this area to learn from firsthand. It was, you think, when you're young, you think, oh, it must be like that everywhere, where it's not.
Right.
I was lucky to learn from a lot of these guys firsthand, and just to watch them and be around them was sure. Great. Yeah.
So tell me about the first moment. Now, I know, like, you probably grew up like everybody else loving, like, Lynyrd Skynyrd and people like that. But how did you really get into the real blues guitar sound, and what got you into that?
I Well, I was into blues, and like I said, I was always interested in learning something. So I had a book. I believe I was already into Robert Johnson. I mean, this is probably right when I got out of high school, and then bought this book by Robert Palmer called Deep Blues, and it just started my, journey into this music. When you first start, you have, I mean, I had like the Allman Brothers albums, and they had songs by T-Bone Walker and Willie Cobb on there. So you start like looking into those guys, and it's just, you just start going back and back. And I've always liked history of any sort. So that was a natural. And my mother's side of the family is from Mississippi in the Delta. My grandmother was a Stovall. And so I had that connection. But when I heard that music, it just felt, it was instantly familiar. It's like something that I already knew, but had been awakened or something. I don't consider myself a blues guitarist. I'm just more of an interpreter. I'm a white boy from East Dallas.
Hey, that's cool. I like that. So when you got with these guys, I know it's been so long ago since you recorded it, but now tell me about recording this album though. As far as I know, you said you didn't have a whole lot of time. You kind of just like, here you go, let's do this. You brought your songs, they got their songs, and you kind of just came together. How did you decide really when they were doing their thing? How did you kind of know what to play, and how did you kind of improvise, or how did that work out?
Well, I mean, I just the first thing I do is listen and try to find a part, a complementary part. It's just like a conversation with several people. What I say is going to be dictated by what you ask me.
Right.
So try not to, and I would always try to lay back and not overplay, not find a part and play it, and not step on anybody else. That's really kind of my formula for like playing music.
Sure. And I guess when you're around a bunch of guys that are playing blues and really getting into it, kind of probably pumps you up and kind of inspires you to be surrounded by that, right?
Oh yeah, I mean, Vince and Buddy are phenomenal players. Everybody involved is A1. So you don't want to, be the weak link.
Right.
Do your best, try to do your best work, and like I said, not step on anybody's parts.
Sure. So the new album, have you gone back and kind of listened and said, this is pretty doggone good. And this is not too shabby. Have you been enjoying revisiting that time and really hearing how it came together, the sound and
Sure.
everything?
Yeah, because it's, once something's recorded, I don't really dwell on it. I move on unless it's something I go back and revisit to perform live, and I hadn't done it in a while. So yeah, it was like when I went back to listen, a lot of it was fresh again because I'd been away from it for so long.
Right. And I know you probably with different projects that you do, I know like with Monkey Beat and different, other things you do, how does your style kind of change when you're playing with other people, or does it change, or do you adapt to a certain playing style? How does that work out for a different project?
Again, it's all about listening. I just try to play what's appropriate,
Yeah.
and not try to play everything I know, which wouldn't take very long, but just find a nice simple part and play it. And I'm not a showboat or anything. I'm happy being a part of the team.
That's good. That's a good way to be, right? And of all your influences though, that you love all the blues players, and do you take some of what they did and kind of make it your own? I guess most people do without stealing. I mean, I guess you could just copy, note for note, but there's got to be times though when you're playing maybe your own original stuff that you kind of hear that influence. And it probably makes you smile to know, just to think about all that you've enjoyed listening to. It probably comes out in your playing. You probably notice when you play, right?
Yeah, it's just everything that I'm playing is a sum total of what I've heard. It's kind of fun to take something from one style and apply it to another. I can't really give you an example off the top of my head.
Yeah.
But maybe I'd learned, you know, from a Ramon song or something. I just an extreme example and try to apply it to some different style. Or a blues song to something that's a, you know, hard rock or high energy thing.
Right. It's, well, tell us about some of the songs that you, that your particular songs on the album. What are some of the stories behind the songs? How'd you come up with the titles and the everything, the lyrics, and what really happened? What inspired you for these songs?
Well, I mean, I'd rather be lucky than good is looking at the songs right now. I had the title, I'd Rather Be Lucky Than Good. Because, you know, it's a cliche or saying that you probably heard at some point, which is a pretty common formula to write with. But I wrote that with Tom Hambridge, Buddy Guy's drummer, producer and songwriter. We've worked together on several projects. And I had that stashed away. I wasn't sure where I would release it. I just knew I could use it at some point. So that came in handy. Trip Hammer. That's, I just like the way that sounded, you know. I don't, you know, I can write narratives and I can write story songs, but sometimes I just like the way the words sound, because that has nothing to do with, it's almost, if you took the words Trip Hammer and put in Jesus Christ or something, it would fit the lyrics more. Right. if you go back and scan the lyrics, I know that's a kind of a strange answer, but that's all I got, officer. And Purple Mountain Mask, I think I probably just smoked some weed and thought that sounded cool. And because, like, looking at a bottle of Crown Royal in the little purple velvet sack, you know, I think that's probably where that came from.
Right.
And the last song I had for the album was called Showdown. And that was sort of in the Jimi Hendrix Up From the Skies vibe.
Right.
And if you've heard that song, you'll recognize where I was getting my influence from probably right off the bat.
Sure.
That's a pretty, you know, it's hardly a unique title, but, you know, I'm not trying to reinvent a wheel. I'm just trying to make a good wheel.
You're just trying to have fun. So, you know, it sounds like y'all had fun, you know, jamming and having a good time. I think that's what it's all about, right? And people can tell, I think, when you're playing fits and it blends well and you're having fun, as opposed to, like, I got to play this. like it's a job. You can tell the difference. It sounds like y'all had a great time recording the album. I guess that you did, right?
Yeah, sure. And these guys are all friends of mine, and we all laughed a lot and told a lot of jokes. Yeah, fun. And you know, yeah, I mean, that's what it's about. If it's not fun, then, you know, find something that is, because then people know, they can tell you're not happy.
Right. It makes them, I mean, music makes people feel a certain way. And especially with this kind of music, with the upbeat and the, like you said, you know, somebody wants to listen to Jimi Hendrix or somebody, or like the song that you mentioned at first, you know, it sounds like ZZ Top or something. I mean, people want to hear that. They want to be, you know, they want their mood to be kind of changed from what they were. They want to be upbeat. Now, you can have sad blues songs. You can have slower blues song, but it also fits your mood for whatever you're feeling at the time. But to be real, I guess, makes a difference too. I guess whatever you're playing, do you ever get in a certain mood with your playing and you can really tell the difference in the sound? Let's just say that you're maybe feeling down and out. Can you really hear that? Or do you try to do that? It's something that you kind of comes out, right? It's kind of like, I guess, singing too, you know, same way. You kind of have feelings and you can really, those emotions come out, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably more apparent in a live show, but I think it's, you know, when people are in the room with you, they can really get their pulse on, like, how, you know, where you're, if you're, like I said, if you're really feeling it and you're you're on like riding the crest of the wave and you're directing everything and everything's just happening and rolling and unfolding perfectly. Yeah, people sense that. Even if they're not really conscious, they can't really identify it. They know that something feels good. Yeah. And they can tell also when it's not happening.
Right.
You know, but if you're a, you can at least put soldier through and make the, you know, if you're having a bad night, you can still have a good show.
Right. I'm sure that's happened before. I'm sure you've had all kinds of interesting things happen over your years of playing, right? Are there anything, is there something in your mind, though, that, that stands out with your playing, an experience maybe that you had that is an unforgettable moment? And I know, like, I was looking over some of the people you played with, you've had all kinds of awesome people, which you're not too shabby yourself. But what are some of the moments that you've really said, this is kind of unbelievable to be here playing with these guys?
Oh, man, I played, you know, I opened some shows for George, acoustic, like solo in UK and Ireland. Ooh. And I'm a big Rory Gallagher fan, the great Irish guitar player. And I did some of his songs in Dublin. And so kind to me, they, you know, they were so nice to me. That was really cool. And I think the night that I met George in a bar in Memphis, 1990, and I was playing, he came in and saw it. That was a magic night. Those two pop up.
That's a pretty cool moment. Yeah. Speaking of George, so how did you get the gig with George?
Well, it started at night. I was in Memphis at Huey's Midtown on Madison, and George and his band were recording about two blocks away at Ardent Studios, and they finished for the day and came in to drink and eat before they went back to the hotel, and I was playing, and we finished the first set, and I had done one of George's numbers. Actually, I had done Move It On Over by the great Hank Williams from Montgomery, Alabama.
Right up the road here.
Yeah, and but I didn't know George was there when I had done it. I wouldn't have done it if I'd known that, but I'm glad. Anyway, it worked out in hindsight. So I went over and said hello, and the set, he started moving closer and closer to the stage, and finally was standing like 6 feet in front of me. And, you know, I was still in my 20s then. And, you know, George is a big rock star. So that, like, really motivated me. And then at the end of the set, he said, man, my producer, Terry Manning, would love you guys. I'm going to tell him about you. And he mentioned some things I had done during the course of the set that let me know that he was truly paying attention. I did a Buddy Holly song called Not Fade Away, but I stuck the lick from Please Please Me from the Beatles into it. And he thought that was pretty cool. In fact, he still mentions that to me.
That is cool.
Long story short, like fast forward several years, he did get me hooked up. I got hooked up with his producer. We did some records. I went out and toured and opened for them. Fast forward to late 1998, and they called and asked me if I would join as second guitar player. And I said, yeah, I'd love to. So since 1999, I've been doing that and like doing both bands.
Sure.
More George lately.
And that's, you know, that's got to be, you got two different bands going on. Is there a certain feeling with this band as opposed to the other? I mean, is it, how different are they when you're playing on stage with these two bands?
Well, I'm playing in a support capacity with George. I'm there to play what he's not playing or doesn't want to play, or it's not in his wheelhouse to play. And I'm there to make, that's my role. So I'm there to honor that role. And in my band, it's all what I want to do and how I want to do it. And with that freedom comes a lot more responsibility. So, and sometimes that's great. And other times it's not. If things are hard or things, you know, it's aren't going well in some particular way, then it's on you, you know?
Yeah. You're right. I totally get that. Well, tell me, about, now I heard a story or read a story about you never played on stage with Stevie Ray Vaughan, right?
No.
But you did, you met him a few times, right?
Yes.
And was there a story about you gave him a watch or something, or something happened like that, or how did that?
My dad owned a jewelry shop in Dallas called Lakewood Jewelers for like 45 years. And in 1989, in the summer of 89, I was happened to be in the shop that day, and Stevie Ray Vaughan, who was living in Dallas then, came in. He had this antique watch, came in to get it repaired. I walked right past him. I was leaving the store. I didn't even look to see who my dad was waiting on. And my dad said, "Hey, son, there's somebody here you might want to meet." And so, you know, once I realized who it was, I went back over and we talked. And he and my dad talked about, we were related to some Vaughns from Oak Cliff, which is a section of Dallas. And even a Jim Vaughn, who was Stevie's dad, Big Jim. Much to my disappointment, after a while, I learned we were not related. My dad asked him, "Do you have any advice for my son?" And he said, "Yeah, keep it clean." He was into his recovery at that point. So he never comes back to get the watch, probably as a result of these ridiculous conversations we were having. But a year later, he was playing in Dallas's final show, and I guess it was June of 1990, and I went out. It was the local Shed Amphitheater. I went out there and got backstage and took his watch back to him. And we talked again then. 2 months later, he had passed away.
Wow. I know things happen for reasons, but that's a really cool moment to experience with somebody that you admire, you know, and for him to say that. I guess that advice kind of sticks with you for a while.
I was kind of mortified when my dad asked him that at the time, because I was still trying. I could play, but I was still trying to get it together, you know. And but you know, he was super sweet and kind and very patient. And when I took his watch back to him, he walked up with Tommy Shannon, and he was wearing his stage clothes, and he had a glow, an aura, and I've told this story a lot, and I'm not touchy feely crystals, but I believe in things I can't see. And he had an energy. He was radiant. He had something, and it touches people to this day. And I'm here to tell you, I saw it in person. And he played his ass off that night. He jammed with B.B. King. He insisted that B.B. close the show out of respect, even though we were in Stevie's hometown. But yeah, so, I probably played 8 or 10 times.
Wow. He definitely had an energy. You could definitely hear it. I never saw him play, but I wish I would have. But hearing it, there's something special that's like no other. I mean, you can't really copy that. I mean, that's really amazing stuff. But as you're playing, you know, for you, what do you think makes a great solo, or what makes a great solo part, or in your mind? I mean, it doesn't have to be so special, you know, to a degree, but what makes it stand out, do you think, in your mind?
I don't know. To me, some of my favorite solos are the most shortest and most concise solos. I need to hear a lot of stuff, and I do like that at times. But like my favorite Eric Clapton solo is the song "Badge,"
yes,
from the Cream album. Maybe it was "Goodbye," but it's a short solo. It's very lyrical. It's almost like another vocal part. Like a lot of David Gilmour's solos are like that too.
There's a lot like that. Yeah, I'm
trying to write words, and I'm having difficulty. But just something that's honest. That's like that grabs people, and I can't really tell you why what makes something that. But if you can achieve that, then I think you're on to something. Of course, right. I mean, it has to be pleasing to the ear and fit the song. I mean, everything is there to serve the song, ultimately, or it should be.
Sure. And you know, I guess with more experience comes the knowing when to play, what not to play. And I guess you probably did that with this new album, you know, back then was, like you said, sitting back, not overdoing it, not overstepping somebody. They probably did the same thing with, like, when you're doing your song, they're probably sitting back and trying to figure out what they want to play or how do they want to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's probably the funnest part probably with something like that is just kind of getting together and seeing what's going to happen. It's not really like it was planned, right? It's kind of spontaneous, right?
Yeah, and that's the beauty of music. Like when everybody else in the room can feel that too. I mean, it really is magic. Music is magic. Tom Petty said that. And
he's right.
Yeah, he wasn't from too far from where you are anyway. Was right. He from Gainesville?
Is that Gainesville. Right? Which is, what, 100 or 200 and something miles, I guess, from here? Something like that. Close to the Florida line, but that you're right. It's a special thing. Y'all capture it on this album. I just gotta say, it's a really good album to jam and listen to. I mean, and that's kind of hard to come by these days. You know, a lot of people put out stuff, you know, just to be putting it out. You know, but to me, I think you know, when you got a bunch of guys that have a lot of talents and different kinds of styles but come together kind of like in an all-star form, it really makes a difference, you know. And I think people will enjoy this. What's been happening with the other guys that recorded this? Now, are y'all going to do something special for this album, or what's going to happen?
Well, this Saturday, November 25th in Fort Worth, Texas, we have a album release party at the Ridgely Room, which is part of the Ridgely Theater. And beyond that, we've got some dates in early 2024 here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And we'd like to do some theater and festival dates, you know, outside the area, nationally or overseas in 2024. I think I'm just kind of waiting for my Thorogood touring schedule to shake out for next year, and then I can proceed. Let me show you this inside of this album.
Cool.
Vance Converse, that's me. And then, Buddy Whittington and Jeff Simon. And then Nathaniel Peterson, the bass player, who sadly passed away a couple of months ago. But it's almost like a franchise, because the only people that are on the album that are doing this release party this weekend are Buddy and I, and we're using my drummer and his bass player. And Vince is in Denver, but we'll do some stuff with Vince and the three of us, and Jeff Simon, the drummer from the Destroyers, will join at some other point. It's just like geographically, we're kind of a lot of, except for Buddy and I, we're very spread out. We're in like three different times.
Right. But it's got to be cool to play the songs again, right? After all that time, right?
Relearn some of it, because it's, you know, once I record something, I'll listen to it just to critique it or to mix it or whatever, but then I kind of move on. So I have to go back and relearn a lot of this stuff, which, you know, I'm in the process of doing.
Sure. It might, I mean, that'd be an experience in itself, you know, just kind of going back and going, oh yeah, I remember that part. So what's been the reaction of some of the people, you know, maybe some of your friends and people like that, that you kind of let them hear it? What's been their reaction? Were they kind of surprised and have a smile on their face to hear that sound? That's a cool sound. I mean, it's a cool sound.
The feedback I've gotten has been positive. I haven't actually said, I mean, I've given some promo CDs to some friends, but back when I was actually playing it for people, I mean, that was right after we did it, which was, you know, in October 2009. So it's been a minute since that happened, but the feedback I've gotten has been positive. Yeah. Everybody likes it.
That's awesome. Well, I appreciate you talking with me today. I'll be promoting that music couple of singles. I think y'all released a couple. I think it's on YouTube. But everybody can check out. Where can they find out more about this album and things like that?
There's not a Texas Scratch website at this moment, but if you go to Quarto Valley Records, Quarto Valley Records, their website, or jimsuler.com, you can find out more about it. Here's the album.
Awesome cover.
Yeah. And while I'm at it, I also did a single earlier this year called Get Your Head Right, and you can download that on my website or any of the any music platforms where you would normally do that. I would encourage anybody to purchase it or stream it if you got to, you know.
Sure. Great song, by the way. That one, just, yeah, the Get Your Head Right. Yeah.
I just real quick, Gary, I just did one with Tyler Bryan from Nashville. Are you hip to him? Tyler Bryan, Shakedown.
Yeah.
No, he's a badass. I've known him since he was 12. He's from my area.
Cool.
And did something with him, and his lovely wife Rebecca from Larkin Poe was nice enough to sing harmonies on it. Awesome. So it's pretty killer. It's called Dusty Groove, and we're going to put that out early in 2024.
Cool.
So I had to throw that in there. Thank you.
You got to. It's all your stuff you got going on.
Yeah, man.
You got a website though, right?
Yes, jimsuler.com, JIMSUHLER.com.
Okay. And I guess on social media, they can check you out, social media, things like that, and they can look for the albums and whatever you got going on. YouTube's a good place to check out some of the music too. And some great stuff, man. I've been checking it out. I love the new album too. And I hope everybody gets a chance to listen to it, because it really is good. And it really was worth the wait. Really good stuff, man.
Well, thank you. To get down to Burr someday and go to the Blueberry Festival.
There you go. So you know about all that stuff.
Well, I looked it up. Festival.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, the email said you were in Brewerton, and there is no Brewerton.
Yeah. It's Brewton. Brewton.
Okay. Yeah, there's an Italy, Texas, but everybody calls it Italy.
Italy. Yeah, you got to have that accent. You were talking about your family from Mississippi. Well, we're all from Alabama, but my granddad moved to Pascagoula and Moss Point years ago. So I have aunts in Mississippi. So I'm just saying the whole Delta area is my family. You know, that's another thing about growing up in Texas or Alabama. You learn to appreciate all kinds of music, especially rock, southern rock, blues, country. It all kind of ties in. It all comes from the same spot. The blues kind of started it all. We kind of just stole everything, you know, from those guys. But people understand when you're from the South about music, I think, more because you've heard it all, and you've been right in the middle of it. You've seen these classic blues players and firsthand. So I know you've had a great time listening to that, right?
Oh, sure, man. It's the best. It's the truth in three chords. It's what it is, you know?
Yeah. That's awesome stuff. Well, I thank you, Jim, for chatting with me. Looking forward to seeing, you know, in the future, what you got going on. I have to check out. I missed y'all coming in this area, George. I mean, come on. That's good stuff, man. But maybe I'll get to check you out somewhere someday.
Yes, and send me a message, and I'll hook you up, man. I'll get you some tickets.
I sure will do that, Jim.
Right on.
Thanks a lot. Well, you have a great afternoon, whatever's left of it. And yeah, man. We'll talk to you later.
Okay, Gary. Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode, everybody. Happy Thanksgiving once again. Hope you had a great day. And check out Jim Suler's website for more information and all his social media pages. And check out the new album, Texas Scratch. Until next time, everybody, always remember to keep the music real.